Welcome to the IT Babble Podcast, where we talk about educational technology and a whole lot more. You can find our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe, or your very favorite podcasting app. Also, you can find our blog at www.itbabble.com.
Welcome back, everybody. It's IT Babble Podcast, episode 205, being recorded on February 20th. Tony, a congratulations is in order for you, but I imagine that's I don't know if we want to talk about it now, or do you want to talk about it later, or how do you want to start this off?
Well, I put it on our list. We can talk about it later.
All right, cool. Man, it's exciting.
Yeah, if people, just so people don't have to worry, I did go to the Olympics. I did participate, and I got the bronze. So
congratulations.
That's all you need to know.
I think we're going to be talking about, of course, we'll do What Am I Drinking? We're going to talk about some news that came out of Google, which I think is pretty cool news. I think this is a good thing.
It's good.
Your announcement. And then you've got another one on there, tech support. Nobody understands the cloud. And so I can't wait to hear about
I'm just going
to
rant. So, you know, people don't, it's not going to be informative really. I'm just going to complain.
Perfect. Hey, that's all right. We can do that here. But first, we want to talk about Benedict Cumberbatch. So I, on Thursday, it was a slow day. We took care of a number of things in the morning, and then it was quite slow. We had a professional service day on Friday, so teachers were just kind of wrapping up the week. So usually when that happens, there's not a lot of tech requests or tech support going on, and we have time to work on projects. And so we were talking about Benedict Cumberbatch, and we couldn't get his last name. We just couldn't figure out his last name. And so I decided to see, does anybody else have this problems? And apparently there is a website on Wattpad, which I've never heard of, but they have the many names of Benedict Cumberbatch. And they're Bindi Straw Creamsicle. I mean, they're Cucumber Bandersnatch. They're just really funny. I just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bento Box Crimpy Snitch.
Bandicoot Thundersnatch. I mean, this is awesome.
Bumblebee Candy Crush.
There are some inappropriate ones on here, but there are, well over 100.
Benjamin Kryptonite.
Oh, this was like 30 minutes of entertainment for us in the technology office.
There's a Between Two Ferns episodes where Zach Galifianakis interviews him, and it's awesome because he can't say his name.
Oh, Engelbert Humperdinck. That's just funny. Anyway, I thought it's just something funny that our listeners out there might enjoy. And some people probably already know about that, but I don't care. It was a lot of fun for us. So, man. Oh, so now, Tony.
What am I drinking?
What am I drinking? What do you got going on tonight?
Tin Roof Blonde.
Whoa. Wow.
Tin Roof Blonde.
I'm looking that up. Is Tin Roof the name of the brewery?
Yeah.
Nice. Let's see here. Oh boy, hold on here. Yeah, Tin Roof Brewing Company, Baton Rouge. I've never heard of it.
It's good. It's good stuff. It's very flavorful, but incredibly light.
Nice. Very good. And you are drinking. Wow, they make a lot of different beers. And you were drinking the
blonde and the purple and white can.
Oh my gosh, they have so many. They have so many. Oh, no, that's Uber Fruit. That's in a purple can as well.
I've got to get down to Baton Rouge.
They do seem to make some good beer down there in the
Deep South.
Deep South, yeah. Yeah. For sure. Oh, there it is. It's right there. I just went right past it there. Let's put a link there, and for our Hold on here. I spelled Tin Roof wrong. Tin Roof Blonde. Nice. I am drinking a Big Lug, which is just a, it's right here in Indianapolis. You're probably not going to find it unless you're in Indianapolis. Goat Ranch, which like your blonde, it's a very light beer, very easy to drink. Let's see here.
Big Lug Boat Ranch?
Goat Ranch.
Goat Ranch.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Let's see if I can get a link over here. I don't know. Yeah, but their stuff is pretty good here. Drink PD, they got a link to their they don't have a link to the actual beer, but anyway, yeah. There you go. There you go.
Does yours have a goat on the can?
It does. It has a goat head. It's a green and
I see it. Yeah, it's good.
It is.
It's a Hella style.
Yeah, yeah. Very light. Very easy to drink. Like this would be a great beer on a hot summer day. You know, we went cut the lawn. It's 100 degrees outside. Just gonna have a goat ranch. Refresh yourself. Okay, that's enough of that. All right, that's enough of that. That's enough of that. Tony, last week I saw this article. It was everywhere. It was on Engadget, The Verge, Gizmodo was everywhere, about Google Flex OS. And what this is it'll allow you to install Chrome OS on an older Windows machine or an older MacBook. I guess you could do it on a new one too. I don't see why you couldn't, but why would you? But if you have older, so we have some old laptops that we don't upgrade anymore because it will break them. They're just will be too slow. But with that hardware, Chrome OS will actually run really well.
Right. Because it doesn't need much.
Yeah. And on top of that, it doesn't just, because anybody, you can install Chrome OS on anything anyway right now. But what this does is if you manage your Chromebooks, like inside the Google admin control panel, this will register them, I believe. This will enroll them.
Whoa.
Which is pretty
sweet.
So
I've already, full disclosure, I've already signed up for a trial.
Hmm. Awesome.
And I'm going to try to set one up next week.
I reached out to them and I filled out the form, and then a representative emailed me and they said, hey, can you give us all this information? Which I already gave them in the form, but I don't understand what was that. I just want to know is because you were on the enterprise version of Google Workspace. So you guys have a paid version. We do not. And I'm wondering if we can use it for, because when we buy a Chromebook, we have to buy a license to support our Chromebooks.
Right.
So I'm wondering if we need to buy licenses for this, or I don't know. I don't know what's going on, but it's going to be pretty cool. We have a whole cart of 11-inch MacBooks, MacBook Airs, that are in desperate need of something like this. So it'll save us money, a little bit of money, and
I'm all over it. Yeah. And I'm obviously going to try to virtualize it as well in VMware.
Ooh.
And see what happens.
Now, that's pretty crazy, where somebody can just kind of, like a thin client, just kind of log into it.
Yep. So I'm going to see how that works, because, and I put this in the notes, when Chrome OS first came out, you could download it easily and just install it on stuff. And I actually ran it in VirtualBox on an iMac to test it out. And then Google was like, guess what? We're not doing this anymore. And they took it away and they came up with the Chromebook. And I was annoyed. I'm like, come on, guys. Yeah. So I've been waiting for this to like kind of come back around.
This is a genius move. People, because
I wonder if you can dual boot it. I'll know soon enough.
That would be cool.
Yeah. I'll tell you, it would be amazing if you could get like a Windows S type laptop, one of the limited ones.
Yep.
And you could set up a dual boot so that if somebody booted into Chrome OS, they would have a fully functional Chromebook. But if they decided to boot into Windows, they would just have a super limited version of Windows.
Yeah.
So most people won't go to the limited version of Windows where you have to have the App Store.
Yeah.
Like only. So it would be there, you know, for whatever reason, if you absolutely needed it. But if not, you could just, you know, run Chrome OS. Now, Windows 10, the newer versions, and Windows 11 ship with Linux built into the system. Most yeah. people don't know that. You have to do a few things to set it up, but you can actually run Windows native, Windows and Linux natively together in the same kind of environment. So this makes me wonder if this could be virtualized on the Windows hardware, because Chrome OS is basically a Linux derivative. So yeah, I'm gonna test that concept out, because that would solve a lot of problems. I mean, for me, what I would really like, especially for equipment that is used by temporary people, substitutes, etc., I want them to have something a little bit more powerful than a Chromebook, but I want it to be so regulated and controlled. Because some people are just volunteering. They're not on, they don't have any contracts.
Yeah.
They're just helping out. I don't want them to have like official like equipment that's connected to our normal management platform.
Mm-hmm.
I just want it to be simple and easy, but student Chromebooks are just a little too weak.
They are. They can be a little weak. That's for sure.
Yeah. And if you have a front of house person who really just does email scheduling on the calendar, you know, they don't really need Office or anything, setting up a more powerful Chromebook type system for them would also be more cost effective. And again, it's going to be better for your environment, because you're not going to worry about the malware, the viruses, all the other stuff
mm-hmm.
that you have to worry about with Windows.
Yeah. Or even Mac. Mac doesn't have a lot of viruses, but there's still some out there, and malware too.
I think the thing is, Mac works just fine, but it's the cost. I mean,
it is.
If you could take like an old Lenovo, like all-in-one, turn it into a more powerful Chromebook, it'll have a nice like one-piece look to it. It'll look nice and clean, can be at the desk, but you're still going to have that advantage of the iMac, where you don't have to worry so much about the malware.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And a lot of people.
And for people.
Oh, go ahead.
Sorry.
I was just going to say, a lot of people don't know that Chrome OS is very secure.
It's incredibly secure.
Yeah.
I've been pretty impressed. I mean, I'm sure somebody at Google is like literally, you know, watching our faces. But aside from that, those people who are paid to stare at us through the Chromebook itself, or the AIs that are like watching our mouth movement and listening to our language to learn how to speak and communicate. Except for that, I think it's incredibly secure.
Yeah.
I review, so we use malware bytes, at my company, and I review the console 3 times a week. It's on my calendar to go in and review all the logs, reports, all updates that need to be done, etc. And I can tell everyone who might be listening, those people who are like, yeah, Apple has problems too. Okay. It for me, my stats with 70%, or it's closer to 80% of the users are on Apple. 99.8% is all for malware is all Windows.
Oh boy.
So far.
Man.
Like it's not even close.
Yeah.
And it's thousands per day on Windows. Thousands. It's not like occasionally. It's just ongoing, you know. So it is like a legitimate problem. Now, some of it is adware, you know, that pops up.
Yeah.
But the number of command and control systems that try to get into Windows to turn the Windows into little bots for a botnet, like mm-hmm. it's a lot higher than you think. They're not successful, but they're trying every day. And yeah, so I look at the data and I'm just like, why are we even considering Windows at all? Like, I'm not, you know, I'm not trying to be super down on it. I know it's a very comfortable platform for people to use, but it's just so risky. I mean, it's just never really gotten I thought that there would be a point where people are like, okay, Apple's the most popular. Let's try to take it down. And they would have just been like, you know, we're done. We're done with Windows. But apparently that isn't the case. You make more money stealing from Windows users. So that's where people are targeting.
Yeah. And that's where business is pretty much on Windows, you know? We have two Windows users in our school, and they're on Windows for very specific reasons. You know, they're legit reasons. We just get some. Those are kind of like those weird head scratching problems where it's like, God, why is it doing this? And we just can't understand what is going on. And then when you go on the forums, there's like a million answers for, like, it seems like the same problem, but there's like a million different answers, and you have to comb through, try all of them out and see which one works best. And I'm on a Windows machine right now, but I'm pretty safe with it. I don't go to too many risky websites.
At least there's a lot of different types of hardware and software out there for Windows. Like, it's all over the place, but just to lower the risk profile, if I could give somebody Windows hardware designed for Windows hardware with Chrome OS, and as an aside, have a limited version of Windows on there as a backup, I think that would actually be a pretty interesting model to look at.
I think that'd be great.
Even for parents who are, so there are a few parents who I've spoken to who want to keep their kids on Chromebooks in high school. And you just run into issues with certain things like Logger Pro or some of these other pieces of software that you must install on the machine. So now, if you think about it, if you had the limited version of Windows, you could give them something that's like Chrome OS driven. But if they enroll in a course where they need software, you theoretically could do it if they needed it.
Mm-hmm.
When you're in science class, boot into Windows. Great. When you're in graphic design, boot into Windows. But everything else, you stay in Chrome.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, it's good. It's great. It just gives you so much flexibility. You could secure it in a number of different ways too. I like it. I like that idea. I like the dual boot. I like it. I can't wait to see what happens. Yeah. It's going to be sweet.
I'm going to do my best to destroy a piece of hardware with this operating system.
You might succeed. You just might. Anyway, Tony, speaking of succeeding, that's a pretty good one, huh?
Yeah, good transition, Patrick.
Yeah, thank you. So, there we go. Yeah.
What was that? I didn't hear that.
That goes on for like another minute. I gotta turn it down here. Seller, congratulations. You took a test and passed it.
I did. I have completed my CISSP, it's the Certified Information System Security Professional Examination. I'm waiting for my certification to be fully approved. So I passed the test, but they actually review the test, and they review your biometrics, a video of you taking the test to confirm you did not cheat. Before they will actually send you the email to issue you the certificate.
Nice. Now, do you have to take that test every so many years to keep up your certification, or is it scuba diving?
I have to do continuing education units every year. And there, there's probably going to be a point in 5 years where I have to do it again. But I hope the second time it's not as brutal as the first time. So I'm going to keep up my CEUs because, man, it was a lot. And the test is mental. So whenever I was try to explain this to people, they just couldn't stare at me. So if you see the material that you have to study, you would think that there are 1,000 questions on the test.
Yeah.
The test is 3 hours long, but there are only 100 initial questions.
Okay.
So just kind of think about that. Like, some people actually spend around an hour and a half to 2 hours to do the 100 questions. It's just a very weird setup. So the question pool, I think, exceeds like 10,000 options. Like, it's a massive question pool.
Jeez.
And it covers 8 different domains of knowledge. And you have to pass each domain, and it's not given to you in order. So it's not like domain 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. It randomly chooses questions from each domain and throws them at you. Once you pass a domain, which you don't know, like you can try to guess what domain it's testing you on, but that's a waste of energy. Trust me, you don't do that when you're taking this test. It's just like you're so focused just on each question. So after it determines that you've done enough in that domain, it will give you more or like whatever. But within the 100, this is where it's messed up, Patrick. There are 25 questions that don't count at all. They're beta questions.
Wow.
And
weird.
They're designed. So some people say they're designed to like help the test evolve in the future to see like what your knowledge base is. But other people told me that they're literally designed to stress you out because they're so hard and they're topics that aren't really in the official material. So imagine having like the official material, the books, like the books alone. If I took the two main books I had and stacked them, they would be 4 inches high. So within that 4 inches, these beta questions don't really exist. So yeah, I had a slide deck of like 800 and something slides too. I mean, so these beta questions are designed to like stress you out. And I'm telling you, I got 20 of those 25 questions in the first like 20 questions. It's like every single question. For the first 10 questions I got, I was like, I should just quit right now. And that's how I felt. I'm like, I have no idea what's going on. And I had taken 2,000-ish practice questions before I walked in. So I'd already done like 2,000 practice questions. And so I'm in this test and I'm like, okay. So I had like a whole plan, like to calm down, to like be mentally focused. There was a point where when I was studying, I realized that the test isn't all just about the content. The test is about itself. Like, because a lot of the work that you do, with the skills that you learn, or maybe the skills that you have learned and you're demonstrating them. So the test is really a demonstration. You've been doing X number of jobs for the last 5 to 10 years. Prove to us that you can do all these things. And one of those things is to be in a tricky situation where there's not a clear answer and you have to figure out the best way to proceed. That's a big part of the job, right? With security, with incidents that happen. With things that just kind of start going bad and you have to solve them with very little information. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of that like theory and concept built right into the way the test itself works. So yeah, I really haven't slept well for like at least a month. So I'm feeling a lot better now. And I was really happy when I passed. Like, I have fist pumped the lady at the test center. I was like, okay, said I passed, fist pump. And she was like, what? I'm like, just trust me. Okay, I need this. So, yeah. So anyway, the downside about doing the test, though, is that you go through all of this legal stuff. Like, you really, really learn more about the legalities, especially in the United States, around the kind of work that you and I do. So now I'm just trying to relax, because when I go to work, I'm just making lists nonstop of all the things that are wrong. I'm like, we got to fix this. And some of it's not, it's not that it's wrong, like we're going to get in trouble or something. Like private schools don't have to meet all these recommendations. It's not that. This isn't like we're breaking the law. It's more like there's a guideline, which is a recommendation, and you really want to work towards that guideline, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm just like, oh, we should do this and we should do that. We should do this and we should do that. I'm like, no, no, no. Like, no one is ever going to do all this stuff. Like, it's impossible. It is impossible. You know, I was thinking about it. I was like, for a school to be completely compliant with like Department of Defense IT regulations, we would have to basically shut down, right? So I was going through kind of the top one. Like, let's say I took the top 100 pieces of compliance. I'm like, we might be able to get 10 of those, 10 out of 100. And it's not bad to work towards that. So like, it's not like a measuring stick necessarily, but I'm going to start kind of using some of these guidelines to develop like new policies and procedures to try to get the school like going in the right direction, so that if something bad does happen, like a natural disaster, a cyber attack, like ransomware, we're at least better prepared.
Yeah.
But it's a lot of work to do any piece in your organization. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of thinking, paperwork. You got to get people together. You got to figure out who your stakeholders are. You got to walk through all the scenarios. Like, so I'm going to try to find some stuff that might be interesting to people. Like, you know, what would we do if this happened? And just, even though we can't like actually simulate the whole thing, but like kind of mentally go through it. So if it does happen, there's been at least some exercise, like some thought put into it. So yeah. I'm going to start working on, some of that. And, yeah, it's been interesting preparing for it and seeing what areas I was like really strong in and areas I was weak in. And here's the worst part. The area in the CISSP that I use every single day is the area I scored the lowest in on every practice test.
What's that?
Single sign-on, SAML, all that stuff. You link systems together.
Yeah,
I do that every day. Like, and I'm good at it. Like, I'll tell anybody I'm good at that. I have got our systems working with single sign-on. I think we're at like 98-99%, and I'm not bragging. Like, we're communicating with every provider with one account. We've got multi-factor where we need it. Like, we're doing it. And it's a lot of work to keep all that stuff going and to constantly audit it and make sure it's working. And I feel like I know it inside and out. And I was scoring like 60%. And I'm like, how is this possible? I use this every day. Why am I failing these questions? But when I got on the test, the questions on the test were actually a little bit more practical. So I felt like I did better on the test than the practice. But it was like really getting me down because I'm like, it's like a swimmer, like, okay, I swim every day and now you're telling me I can't swim. Like, I don't understand what's going on. So anyway, it's, the first part of the journey is behind me. Now I'm just working on the application of the knowledge.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. Yeah, there we go.
And let me see if I can give you a little piece of information that you might not know that you might think is interesting.
Yeah.
You know, because you got to cover everything in CISSP, including physical security, like everything, like different types of door locks and all kinds of stuff. You know, those concrete or metal things that people put up so cars can't drive up to buildings?
Yes. Yeah. Sometimes you know they raise up out of the ground or whatever. Yeah.
Do you know what they're called? Or they're big round stones.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Do you know what those are called?
I do not know.
They're called bollards. B-O-L-L-A-R-D-S.
Bollards.
It sounds very British to me.
It does.
Yeah. So anyway, there's a little CISSP vocabulary.
There you go. I'm putting a link of, I'm looking it up. I'm putting a link to, there they are. There they are. I'm putting a link to bollards. For Wikipedia, so you can learn all about them, ladies and gentlemen.
Yep, there you go. You can just enrich your knowledge of physical defense of your building.
Yeah, that's right, man. And there are, I'm just looking at the pictures, and there are quite a number of different bollards, types of bollards out there in the world.
We had these all over our campus in Korea, and we had one set that were automatic that the guards could control, but the other sets all had locks on the bottom, and people actually had to unlock them and lift them out.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know. The school in Korea was pro bollard.
Who isn't? Who isn't these days? All right, Tony. Congratulations on that. But now,
thank you.
You're ready to rant. Ready to get something off your chest. Okay.
So, yeah, and it's so hard to rant anymore because people always think that you're talking about them. Because these situations happen with, like, in a week, they'll happen with like 100 people.
Yeah.
And everyone thinks it's just them. But this is more of a getting a call. Like, just tell me if this has happened to you. You get a call and it's like, hey, you know, there's a problem with like Google Drive. You're like, okay.
Okay.
First thing I do is I go to the status page for Google products.
Yep.
And it'll say Google Drive outage, and it'll show your area. I'm like, oh, okay. And it'll say, like, service is not normal, blah, blah, blah. So you get on the phone, and you're like, hey, I'm sorry there's a problem with Google Drive, but Google's having a problem with Drive. And then what do the people on the phone say back to you? Well, what can we do? Like, we can do absolutely nothing, okay?
Yeah.
There's nothing we can do, like, at all. Like, we can't do anything at all.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
And this has happened like in the last couple weeks. It's happened like two or three times with different kind of cloud products. And you're just like trying to, like, I'm not saying I'm super frustrated, but it's like I can't do anything. Like, I'm happy to monitor it.
Yeah.
And tell you when it's back up. Like, I'll call you. I'll check it every 5 minutes and let you know when it's working.
Yeah.
But I can't fix it. Like, there's nothing I can do. I can't come to your office and make it work.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't an outage, but it was our school information system, which is in the cloud, hosted in the cloud. They had a problem with their login server. And so people would log in, and it would just sit there and think. And people were like, oh gosh, you know, is this, and so I sent out an email. I'm like, well, it's down. And I had somebody who's like, well, when are you going to have it back up? I'm like, this is affecting hundreds of schools. This isn't just us. This isn't just our school in Indianapolis. This is hundreds of schools. This is nothing we can control. We just have to wait for them to bring it back up.
So I actually tell people to, when I see a major outage like that, I'm like, I tell teachers to prepare to not have the service available for the rest of the day. Mm-hmm. Because as a teacher, I would rather know I'm in backup mode the rest of the day, that I need to make copies. I need to have paper ready. I need to have my emergency plans ready. Like, I would want that. And I remember working in the UAE. I mean, we had that undersea cable problem all the time.
Oh,
yeah. Do you remember that?
I do. So it happened.
We always had to have 2 days worth of lesson plans ready for that required zero technology, basically.
And in Dubai, for anybody who's ever been to Dubai, you cannot escape the construction because it's everywhere. And I remember there were times where they were doing construction and just cut through our cable.
Yeah.
And we were just down. Like, the internet service provider would have to go out and actually patch that cable. And it would take them hours sometimes to find out exactly where it was cut because there's like construction going on everywhere. So
I always found that as a teacher, I'd rather just know the worst case scenario. Like, okay, it's noon. It's probably going to take 2 hours. Just tell everyone it's out. The service is out for the rest of the day. Because if it comes back, great. Mm-hmm. But they need to not hold their breath and wait.
Yeah. Luckily, our school information system that we use, they have a status dashboard as well. But they usually, when I went to it, it's like, we've identified this problem. We've identified the problem. And it's like they have updates every 15 minutes. And so you could see,
yes,
we've identified the problem. We're working on it. We've identified the problem. We're working on it. We have a solution that we're implementing. Please stand by. And so
now,
yeah,
if you're a school administrator and you're not working in IT and this is happening to you and you're getting frustrated, and trust me, like the IT staff, they're probably irritated. Like, you know, we can't do anything and they feel helpless.
Mm-hmm.
And they want you to understand, like I want you to understand, but I know that everyone doesn't because it's an emotional reaction to a stressful situation. So one thing though, as an administrator, you can do is make certain that you have at least one person on the technology staff who is signed up to receive outage notifications from all your core services and status updates, or yeah, set up an account, an email account, and have all those notifications go to that so it can be monitored by everybody. Like, mm-hmm, you could send all those notifications to like a Google group, an Office 365 group, and then all the IT people can watch those notifications. And then the senior leadership team, they can be part of that group, but they don't need to get the notifications. However, if they want to, they could jump into the group to see what's happening, like look at the threads that are coming through from these different providers. So I do think it's good to make sure that that process is happening, that there's some incident logging happening so that your staff can react to it as quickly as possible. Because a lot of times the systems are working until the teacher's sessions time out and they have to reauthenticate. So that means your IT staff could have like a 30-minute lead on the problem before people notice. So I don't know. I think it's useful to just, go through that exercise, like make sure people are getting notifications. Any provider that we have that has a health dashboard or status dashboard,
mm-hmm,
I take those links and I put them in our like policy and procedures manual. I put those at the end, like in the appendix. So it's like,
oh, that's a good idea. That's a good idea.
It's like Blackbaud status, whatever. You can just click in the Google Doc. You can just click in the table. The
table of contents.
That table of contents. Yeah. You can see it right there. It'll be like Blackbaud status. You'll hit it. It'll jump down. You can pop the screen open and see. And that way, people don't have to try to remember what all the status pages are, and they don't have to try to Google them. So anyway, I just think any of those steps really can really help, like with the stress. But I was kind of reflecting on it this week because over the last few years, I think it's gotten kind of worse, you know, because more and more services are all cloud based.
That's right. Yeah.
And I've seen like IT staff who do tech support just livid, like, why doesn't she understand? Why is she coming to us? I'm like, well, you know, just.
They
you
need
to
go. Yeah, they need to go to somebody.
I send screenshots too. So
yeah, I do.
I
this.
Actually
yep.
reply back with screenshots to show services are down because no one believes you.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I'm not making this up.
Yeah,
it's down.
There it is. Oh man, yeah, I know. I know exactly. I know, and whenever one person, as soon as one person tells us, our office is immediately checking the dashboards, and once we don't respond to them individually, we just respond to the whole school. We're just like, oh, we've been alerted there's an outage, we confirmed it, please stand by, that kind of thing. So
right,
yeah, it's good. I see what you're saying. It's, you know, no one understands the cloud. Yeah, I thought you were going to talk about the Google Drive app that they keep renaming. That thing is infuriating.
Yeah, I'm actually against, we can talk about this some other time, except for very few people, I'm against all Drive Sync apps for Google, Office 365, Dropbox, and I've heard every argument in the book, but let me just throw out a simple metric. If you're using Drive Sync, if you have, I don't know, if your cloud drive has 3 gigs of storage, you better make sure your laptop has about 6 gigs free at all times.
Yeah. Yep.
And I don't mean three and three. I mean, you need to have double. There's so many weird things that happen with data. And I've had people argue with me and say, no, Google Documents, they don't take up any space on your computer at all.
Oh, but they do.
I'm like, really? How about we remove this folder that says Drive Sync and see how much data comes back on your laptop? The reason we buy laptops that are 128 SSD is because they're cheaper and they're fast.
Yep.
And you're supposed to store everything
in the cloud.
Yeah. Not on the laptop.
Yep.
And I understand the argument for backing up. And I've used the Drive Sync in selective folder mode where I'm just backing up one folder. But do you know how many people remember to do that? Like no one.
Nobody. They back up everything. I had a person come into the office and they're like, yeah, my Google Drive disappeared. And I was like, oh. And immediately I knew what they were talking about. I knew they were talking about this Drive Sync. And they're like, yeah, where I can't get to any of my files. And I was like, no, I said, here's how you get to Google Drive, like the website. And honestly, this is where it is. Now this person, he does a lot of graphics. So he's in Photoshop and Illustrator a lot. And so he stores those graphics there so he can work at them at home. So it's easy for him. It's very easy just to take that PSD file and just drag it over to this folder on his desktop. And then he goes home and there it is. It's in that folder. I understand the ease of use, but whenever it doesn't sync or it doesn't sync well, or you've run out of laptop space and yeah.
This is what most people do when the folder stops syncing or they delete the shortcut. So they don't actually delete the folder. They delete the shortcut and they don't feel like they can find it. So they go back and they re-download it and they reinstall it.
Yeah.
And what it does is it makes a new folder.
That's right.
And it downloads another copy of your stuff.
Of everything
so
else.
So you have a folder somewhere that you can't find and it's got all of your stuff. And then you've got a second folder with all of your stuff.
And
I have seen this happen to people like 3 or 4 times and they will have in triplicate all their files on their machine and they're out of space.
It's awful. And Google and you know, I don't want to blame our users, our end users too much because Google doesn't make it easy because they've had 3 versions of this in the past 7 or 8 years. And
that tells you.
And because it's confusing. It's confusing to explain to somebody. They're like, this is in the cloud, but yes, it's also here as well. And if you delete it here, it will probably delete it. And you know, they're just like, I don't understand. I was like, just go to Google Drive, go to drive.google.com, and that's it.
Yeah,
that's your rock right there. That's
the only straightforward storage that I've seen really is Dropbox. And no, I mean I've never used it at work for work. OneDrive. And Google File Sync, like whatever it's called now, Google Drive Sync.
Oh, yeah.
They both have the same problem. They stop syncing. People reinstall them. They get duplicates. They get triplicates. They run out of space. Yep. Or their friend shares, this is the worst, their friend shares like a field trip folder with them with video and movies. They have the share. And then they decide to make a copy of it so they can do more with the content. That copy goes into their Google Drive in the cloud, and it just starts flooding their machine with media. And again, it runs out of space. So if you've ever had to deal with a laptop that doesn't have any space left on it, it's very hard to do anything on it.
Yeah. If things will just become unresponsive. The laptop will restart itself all the time. Yeah. All the time. It's super frustrating.
Patrick has really touched on a nerve here. I wasn't even going to go into that.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Well, it's something that we've been dealing with because the idea is good, but it's just...
Patrick, what about this one?
Stinks.
Are you ready?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Your free version of iCloud storage has just expired. You only have 5 gigs for free. Would you like to upgrade?
Oh,
and
my
the
gosh.
Person has told iCloud to sync their like desktop, their photos, their all of it.
Everything.
And and it wasn't synced. They put the original in iCloud, so there isn't an actual copy on their computer.
That's right.
And when I've had to deal with that, it's been brutal. You have to make a copy of all that stuff, put it in a separate folder, and then unsync all the iCloud stuff, and then go into the iCloud and delete all of it.
Apple is so that whole system is so dumb. Just so, so dumb. You think that, oh, I don't need that iCloud storage. But I'll get to keep my photos are on my computer. Oh no, they're not. When that storage gets deleted, though, it'll delete those folders. It's so stupid. It's so stupid. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to store your pictures, Amazon. If you have an Amazon account, I believe you have. I think it's something like 30 gigabytes or 50 gigabytes. Let me see here.
I use Google Photos.
And, I do too. Yeah.
I actually like it a lot, and we use it on all our devices, and it's been good. It's not very expensive, but I think Amazon you get
unlimited.
Especially if you're like a Prime member, you get a lot of photos.
Unlimited photo storage, and for videos, 5 gigabytes of videos, which is not a lot if you're filming in 4K, but still, if you're just putting pictures there, it's unlimited. So that's kind of nice. That's kind of good. But oh gosh, yeah. Anyway, yeah, those cloud syncing folders things, like you said, are like they just suck. God, they're just oh, it's so frustrating.
Just drag and drop what you want. It works really easily. It's not even that slow. It's pretty fast.
We had a person who was using the old version of Google Drive, and they had discontinued it, so it wasn't even syncing. And they had for months been putting files and stuff in there, thinking it was syncing to Google Drive. And then the folder disappeared. It was the application, right? The shortcut to the app to the folder disappeared. And we just had to find it. But we were genuinely worried there that she had lost, you know, months worth of work. But we were lucky. We were fortunate. But I don't know. For everybody out there, just go to OneDrive Online. Just go to Google Drive Online. Just do Dropbox. Go directly to their website. Don't use the sync folder. Just don't do it.
Yeah. Don't do it. Just use the tools and upload your stuff. It'll be fine.
All right. But anyway, Tony, that's it. That's all I got. I don't know about you.
Yeah, that's good. I think we went a good direction with that last topic.
I do. Yeah. It's something that's been for years. It's been gnawing at me for years. But anyway, okay. So for IT Babble, I am Patrick.
I'm Tony.
And we will catch you on the next episode. Keep on. Oh, I just punched my mic arm. Just keep on babbling out there.